Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. This episode is from the Momentum Series, resurfacing the most popular episodes from our archives to shine a light on the continued growth of companies in our network. And now, on to the show.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinStrat Management. Super excited because today we have with us Joel Martin, Chief of Staff at Veda Data Solutions and operating partner at HealthX Ventures. Joel, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Christian, and thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Usually like to kick this off, if you can give us a little bit of background on Veda and HealthX, a great starting point.
Yeah, great. That'll touch on my background a little bit as well. So I worked at Epic Systems here in Madison, Wisconsin, the big EMR vendor. Was the first place I worked at out of college, and then did that for a while and went to grad school. And then after that, ended up working at Nordic Consulting, which was at the time when I joined pretty small, grew rapidly into the largest Epic focused consulting company. And so I mentioned that in the context of HealthX, because the founder and CEO of that company was Mark Bakken, and he led the company for about 5 years and then had an opportunity to take his chips off the table and get back to what he wanted to do, which was focus on small companies and entrepreneurship. And so he founded HealthX Ventures in 2015. And I followed him a couple of years later and ran things at HealthX for a while. So HealthX is an early stage fund focused on digital health, mostly some services like tech-enabled services as well. Where our claim to fame, at least in the early days, was being here in Epic's backyard. We have a lot of good relationships with Epic. And so especially on the provider side, initially, we did a lot of work in the health with, you know, and work with a lot of health systems and people in the industry. And that's been a big help for us in terms of supporting our portfolio companies. So first fund was opened in 2015. We now have four funds with something like 110, 120 million in assets under management, 35 portfolio companies, I think. And those, like I said, so the early on was really focused on the provider space. And then as we've moved along, we've moved into other kind of verticals within the healthcare ecosystem. So for example, Veda, where I spend half my time, is in the payer space. And we're slowly expanding beyond just the providers. There's just so much healthcare in particular. There's so much domain-specific knowledge and specificity that we're able to offer a lot more help to our companies and also pick better companies as much as we can work carefully outwards from that provider center. And so we don't do any like biotech. We're not investing in drugs or things like that, drug development companies, stuff like that. So mostly it's software at this point, and a little bit of tech-enabled services. So happy to dive into there anymore. I can tell you about Veda if you want to, or just wherever you want to go.
Yeah, please. I think it'd be great to get a sense of what Veda does and your focus.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. So we invested in Veda out of our second fund in December of 2019. And so that was, I think, our first investment in the payer space. And that was driven really a lot just by meeting the founders. So Megan Gaffney is the founder and CEO and still is. And then Bob Lindner is the chief science and technology officer. And they just came to our office and we met them at a conference for the first time. And then they came to pitch us at our office and they just made such an impression. Megan is a real kind of just exactly what you think, visionary CEO. She knows a huge amount about the industry and how payers work and all that kind of stuff. And even though she doesn't come from a background in that, she actually came from politics before. She worked in campaign financing stuff and worked with in Congress. And Bob is an astrophysicist by training. And he came in just blowing our minds with like his knowledge and just his perspective on how to think about data problems that they're... It's not often not the straightforward answer, or the story is not as straightforward as you think. And you can fix seemingly intractable data problems with creative thinking. That definitely is Bob's forte. Just quickly about the company. So the problem that Veda is solving is around provider data. So insurance companies, we all interact with them, whether we like it or not. And they have to keep an up-to-date directory of the providers who are in their network, who their patients can go see. And that happens generally by the provider, the hospital or the clinic, sending them a spreadsheet once a month or once a quarter or once a year. And the problem is that those spreadsheets are highly inaccurate and often have a lot of extra data. For example, there might be a provider who really only works at one location, but the provider organization, the hospital, has every incentive to say they work at five different locations because that makes it look like there's more access points. And so that's a big problem for the payer because then they have to sift through all of that, not to mention the data isn't standardized. So there's a lot of manual entry comes with errors. So the big payers spend millions and millions of dollars on bringing this data into their systems. And they basically get inaccurate data. Despite spending all that money, in a lot of places in the industry, you see maybe 50, 60% accuracy for provider directories. So anyone who's tried to go to a payer's website and look at their member or their doctor directory will have had an experience of frustration with seemingly 50 different doctors, and then you try calling them and not taking new patients, doesn't practice here anymore, not taking new patients, wrong number, et cetera, going on down the line. So Veda solves those problems by handling the intake of the data. So taking that spreadsheet in and cleaning it up and standardizing it is step one. That's a product called Velocity. And then we have a product called Quantum that takes the entire directory file at rest and does a bunch of analysis on it to figure out where the inaccuracies are. And then Vector is our third product that actually can then supplement the directory with accurate data where there's data missing. So that was a story that we got told that Megan and Bob came and blew our minds with. We had no idea. And it just seemed like there was a huge opportunity, like a really boring problem. But personally, at least, I think those are some of the more exciting ones. So anyway, so I long story short, Megan and I worked together closely for a year. And then she ended up convincing me to come work for her to scale the company. So the company's grown. I was probably employee 30 at the time, and now we're up to almost 90. So it's been growing well, and I think 2025 will probably be our biggest year ever. And I think we'll likely double in size from.
Fantastic. A whole bunch of stuff. So really exciting, a lot to unpack. So for our listeners who may not be as familiar with healthcare, I think there's some themes that would be beneficial to get your perspective on, because I think it'll help provide context, answers to some questions I'm going to start posing towards you.
Sure.
Two themes in particular: this transition with Obamacare from fee-for-service to pay-for-performance, meaning, from my perspective, it increases the stakes of having accurate information, whether it's provider or other.
Absolutely.
But healthcare, for those who haven't been involved, is generally more difficult industry to be successful in for a variety of reasons. One of them being the purchasers are generally more conservative, and for good reason. When you're talking about people's health, the stakes are higher. Given you're in the trenches, you get exposure to a lot of different portfolio companies. How do those themes influence the way you approach Veda, but also on your role as an operating partner in HealthX?
Yeah, great questions. So on the first one, the fee-for-service to value-based transition, I think it's remains to be seen how that really is going to play out in the long term. It's certainly a factor for the payers that Veda works with, for the providers that other HealthX companies work with. And it is influencing behavior in the sense that there is an added stake to having an accurate provider directory. But that being said, my impression, not being directly involved in value-based care contracting, but I think that it is still makes up a quite small minority of the revenue for provider organizations and the money going out the door for payer organizations. So everyone is in some ways having to account for it and preparing for it to some level, because I think people see how, like, all the reasons you would want to do it. But the reality is, as you alluded to, is that getting all of the data is necessary to put in place a big payer contract. And right now, with in a more fee-for-service world, if you get some data wrong here and there, okay, it's just a percentage of claims maybe that don't work out, that have to get rejected. And then there's basically there's manual workaround that you can figure it out. As soon as to try to take jump across the chasm to a value-based care system, you just have to have much more, there's less tolerance for inaccuracy because it's not all a bunch of transactions. It's a big thing where you say, here are the patients, here are the providers, how did the patients fare in this period for these providers, and which providers were responsible for those? So there's a lot of questions that are there. It's just there's more at stake from each of those data inaccuracies. And frankly, I think that's been a big sort of span in the works for the industry adopting those. Certainly there is adoption happening, and there are startups and even larger companies that are doing a lot of business in helping to navigate value-based contracting, but it's a huge industry. So you can have a TAM, a total addressable market, for value-based contracting of, and I'm making this number up, but it could be $50 billion and it's still a single-digit percentage of the industry, right? And so, and that's the, and I think $50 billion would be an optimistic estimate of the dollars that are going on with value-based care right now. I don't know for sure, but I just think it's the reality is that there are so many disparate players handing off so much data in all different ways that it remains to be seen if and when that there's a real genuine shift in the industry. Because I certainly would not bet on it getting to even 20% of cost being covered by value-based care within the decade, for sure. I think it'll be for sure longer than that. So anyway, that was on the value-based care front. Sorry, what was the second question?
Just healthcare being a more conservative industry.
Yeah. So I think healthcare is a conservative industry that ends up touching, especially on areas that hit patient care. There's a lot of conservatism, some of it out of worry about the patients, but frankly, to give our first sort of hot take of the conversation, I would say that a lot of the conservatism is driven by legal and regulatory exposure, that there is just a lot of purchasing decisions. Certainly, healthcare organizations are big, complicated political beasts, that's not unique to healthcare, right? You have politics and purchasing inertia in almost any industry, if you're selling to enterprise customers. But in healthcare, there is just so much exposure, not only to regulation, which you'd have in other industries like banking, but you also have the just sort of constant exposure to getting sued, basically, for anything that potentially implicates patient care. And both of those are about the existing regulations. There's all around the actual care. There's all the stuff around privacy. So that's a huge thing in the industry, rightly. But that just makes everyone more and more careful, because generally, if you're doing a thing one way and you've been doing it for 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, for the most part, you're going to get a warning before you're going to get sued for continuing to do that thing. Whereas if you suddenly change something, even if that thing's great, there's just always an unknown risk of someone second guessing that decision. And that's where I think there's just a lot of more checks and balances in every step of the purchasing decision, especially if anything's hitting patient care. In Veda's part of the industry, sort of privacy and data protection is much more, when we're dealing with provider data, there isn't as much clinical care implication, but you see the same thing, that every bit of data, there's a lot of private and proprietary data that everyone's just very careful about, in a way that even in the banking industry, I don't think there's the difference between a data breach. All of the credit card companies at this point have had a data breach that exposed 100 million people's information or whatever. You haven't had anything like that in the healthcare industry, which is great, but it would be much more front page news for sure because of the type of data that's there in the healthcare industry.
So I think it's a good segue into If you put your health hacks hat on and you start looking at individual portfolio companies, I hear two themes, but two big considerations. Teams, you look at Veda's co-founders, extremely impressive. Love to hear your perspective on the degree that that goes into investment decision-making. But two, also solutions. So we're fortunate to have a number of healthcare-related guests on the podcast. You're a bit unique in that you spent time at Epic. Epic being one of the largest, as you point out, electronic medical record providers in the nation. And for those who aren't aware in healthcare, it plays a really big role in solving a lot of problems because it's the source of the clinical profile of patients. So when you're looking at potential investments or you're looking at other portfolio companies and you're interacting with them, how do you think about founders and solutions or problems they're trying to solve?
That's a big question. So I think in terms of founders, we've certainly learned a lot over the years. One thing I'll say is my experience with Veda and with some of the other companies is I experience in healthcare, as unique as healthcare is, experience in healthcare itself is less critical. It depends on the company, but is less critical than you might think. As much as there is a big learning curve, but there's such a huge learning curve with being an entrepreneur, regardless, that I think in some ways there's a tendency to over-index on that experience, that healthcare experience, because what matters much more is the personality and makeup of that founding team. I say team very deliberately because I think this isn't healthcare specific by any means, but I think a founding team is really a really valuable thing. Solo founders, God bless them, is a really incredibly difficult thing to do. And the reality is at some point you're going to need to spread around and add talent. And there's just a lot of value in having a group of people that are already there at the table that are the co-founders. And so I would encourage anyone, if you have listeners who are thinking of founding a company or they have founded a company solo, to find some co-founders. It's never too late, actually. That's something people think about is, I founded this myself. Now I can't have co-founders, but actually you can, because 2 years from now, everyone forgets about that and you can bring someone on. So I think having a trusted group of co-founders that are all swimming in the same direction is really key. Roughly speaking, you need a visionary / salesperson, you need a technical person, and you need someone to manage all the, keep the trains running on time. So I think that's the ideal triad, is a sales vision CEO, a COO who's going to handle all the nuts and bolts, and then a CTO type person who's going to do all the engineering and the product stuff. And certainly you're going to add to that over time, but that's the makeup I think of. Again, I don't think that's specific to healthcare, but I do think that is much more important than experience in healthcare itself. In terms of solutions, that's where that team has to come up with something that I would say, again, I don't know what I don't know about other industries, but in healthcare, purchasing decisions are really, like, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of solutions out there. There's a lot of inertia, as we already talked about, in terms of making buying decisions. And so you need to be really critical as an investor, and I think as a founder, you should be, about the who is going to buy it and why they're going to buy the thing. And that there are a lot of really great ideas that would be awesome if they were added into the healthcare system that are not actually an investable idea. They're not something you should cash out your 401k and invest all your money in to start a company in, because for whatever reason, it is not at the top or in the top three of your buyer's priorities. And it is not something that a healthcare organization is clearing the deck to try to fix a problem, or there's an obvious ROI case where they're just bleeding cash because of X problem. So it can be a big problem that's in the top three priorities, or it can be such an obvious ROI, return on investment, that healthcare organizations are going to be willing to do something that's lower priority because it's such an obvious win. I think the biggest thing I would encourage entrepreneurs and investors to think about with these things is put yourself in the position of being the buyer and trying to pitch this idea to your boss. So you're a VP of whatever in a healthcare delivery organization and a payer, and you talk to me as the entrepreneur. I pitch you something, you think it's a great idea. That's not good enough. What you got to do, what you got to do now is convince your boss. And that's the thing that's got it. There's so many stakeholders within the organization, and every one of them has to be convinced. Not just convinced, but no one can even raise an objection. Because if there's one objection, the whole thing goes. And I've seen huge multi-million dollar contracts canceled at the 11th hour because one of the seven signatures that are needed on a contract just refused. And that kind of decision. So you really got to have something that's going to be like, that's going to check all the boxes that everyone's excited about, that's easy to explain, to really save yourself a lot of headache.
And I think you bring up a really great point. Earlier you made reference to enterprise sales, and they've historically had longer sales cycles. But if you layer on top this idea of, hey, we have a short list of priorities, and even if you may have a brilliant idea with a high ROI, cash is king. You better have enough to sustain you while you look at those deals.
Yeah.
And for any of our listeners, founders, investors, I would think it's a key consideration in the healthcare space that my sense is sometimes gets discounted. So I think it's really, really solid counsel.
Yeah.
So as it pertains to those ideas, love your perspective. What are the any key point solutions or problems that you are seeing right now on the healthcare landscape that are consistently getting attention?
Like anything, AI and large language models are getting the most attention in healthcare, as with everything else. I think people see the potential, and especially if they're going to be making purchasing decisions right now, they want to be skating to where the puck is, so to speak. And that means I don't want to invest in a solution right now that's improving my efficiency by 20% when some LLM-based solution can improve it by 100% next year. And so I think that just raises the bar for everyone to either be all the more ROI or show that you're using those AI capabilities that in a way that's actually like moving the needle. So HealthX, we have a company we just invested in called Diania that's doing basically, it's using a large language model to digest patient records to feed into research projects. They work for the other co-investors, Cleveland Clinic, and they're actually doing this live to just mine all of Cleveland Clinic's millions of patients to find the seven patients who qualify for this trial, for this new drug, for example, just as that's the kind of rough idea with that. So that's the kind of thing that I think is getting for sure the most attention in healthcare, as with everywhere else right now. That's not to say there are plenty of other solutions. I think from our third fund, six-ish companies now, and two of them are clearly AI related. One of them has an AI piece, but it's not the whole thing. And two of them are not AI based at all. So that's not the only place that investment's happening. There are great, we have another company called Bento that's doing basically matching up, it's focused in California right now, and they're matching up Medicaid patients with food solutions. So it's basically it's a food is medicine is the concept, that you have a lot of patients who we're spending a lot of money on Medicaid healthcare dollars, that fundamentally one of the baseline issues with them for those patients, you can throw all the doctors and medicines you want at them, but if they're not getting nutritious food on a regular basis, then you're screaming in the wind. And so Bento is on a mission to end that kind of end hunger and use food as a medicine. And so they have a whole system to basically connect. There's lots of opportunities for food, free or low cost food in the community, but connecting it with Medicaid patients is often difficult. So that's one that's, there's not an AI component, at least not yet, to that. But it is solving one of these problems that's like a no-brainer for everyone. These Medicaid plans, they have money available to do nutrition. And so everyone's aligned and it's an easy yes. So they've really gone, like we invested in them a year ago. Really going like gangbusters. And so anyway, I think the only theme I would pick out is the LLM stuff. And other than that, I would return to what I said before, which is just focus on ease of sale and clear ROI and that kind of thing.
Got it. So obviously providing capital, extremely valuable, enables the Bentos of the world to scale. What other support does HealthX provide?
Yeah, we have, I think, we have a number of folks on the team who are providing real on the ground day to day. We have a guy, Brian, who is an experienced CFO and has worked for small companies, big companies, private equity, all across the spectrum. And he basically acts as a part-time CFO for half a dozen of our companies and an advisor for 20 other companies. And so that's the kind of thing that we aim to provide in a variety of other areas. I don't think that's not unique. There's lots of big funds that say they have a platform or there's various names for it. What I think is different about HealthX is that it's not just this sort of side thing that the partners can access if they want to. We're actually like the people that are doing those various advisory roles are quite involved day to day with our companies. We have two main investing partners, and the rest of the team is all doing advisors in these various capacities. And I think that ratio is quite unusual for other funds might have some sort of junior people just doing whatever, and then a bunch of partners, and then there's some senior advisors in between. But we have a whole staff of people who are advising in various ways on sales and marketing and finance and operations. That's where I spend my time. And so we think that provides a lot more value to the companies, the portfolio companies.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, getting an infusion of capital is material to a company's timeline, but having experienced advisors, operators like yourself who can help solve problems that accompany growth, material. I think definitely a big deal, because we encounter a lot of investors who are just really hands off and say, and there's a class of investors like HealthX where they realize that there's value in nurturing their founders, bigger win. And so with that, if there are other founders out there who are interested in raising capital for the first time, what advice would you give them when they get in front of a VC?
That's a great question. I'll, at the risk of being a broken record, I would say I would focus on that the pitch of a problem that is obvious and an easy win for the potential buyer. I think there's a lot of tendency. We see a lot of pitches that spend a lot of time focusing on like TAM of, hey, this is a big problem. It's costing the industry X billion dollars, which is fine. You want big problems are good problems to solve for sure. And that I think, so, but all of those should focus. The ideal pitch is where you've got this like clear ideal customer profile that you have. People talk about product market fit. What product market fit is finding a repeatable ICP, ideal customer profile, is finding, here is my product and how it is to be pitched to the people who are going to buy it. And ideally, you can prove that because three of the exact same or five or six of the exact same profile have bought that product at that price. Now, if we're talking to founders and entrepreneurs who are pitching trying to raise capital for the first time, they're not necessarily going to be able to do that. We at HealthX almost always are investing in companies that haven't gotten to that product market fit yet. And so we have to anticipate where that's going to go. That's part of what we have to do. But I think that's the kind of formulation that I would encourage founders to think about is, if you're in an early stage, you're not necessarily going to have it nailed down and have that like proof. You wouldn't be asking us for money if you already had it and the flywheel was going, and you wouldn't need money. You wouldn't need investments then necessarily. But to think about in that lens, I think is the right way to basically de-risk it for the investor, because investors want all upside and no risk, right? That's not what happens. But as much as you can frame it in a way that's like really clear, here's who's going to buy it, here's why they're going to buy it, here's why it's their number one priority. And then the other part of it is, here's why I'm the person to sell it. And that's where I think showing off the team, and for usually it's the CEO that's pitching, that they're gonna be able to pitch anyone, is being clear on that is also important, for sure. So those are the main ingredients of success for a startup. TAM is not an ingredient for a startup success. That's like a feature of the world. And so I think focusing too much on the big problems and why this is a great problem to solve or whatever is a bit of a distraction from the real core point of, here's a buyer, they want to buy it, here's how we're going to reach them, and here's how much they're going to pay.
My sense is that very logical, being able to distill it at the root. It's okay, yeah, we all know you want product market fit. What are the components and how do you get there? And understanding your market, 100% agreed. Actually taking time to talk with a potential buyer and ask him, hey, would you give me money for this?
Yeah.
Helps hone it. Material.
Notably, a buyer who's not your relative, because they...
yeah. Getting honest and sincere feedback. And so with that, Joel, great podcast. I wish we had more time to go longer. Before we wrap up, last question. Would love to hear, now given you have decades of experience, what advice would you give your younger self, knowing that one day you'd be in an operating and investment role?
Oh man, you save a big one for the end. I think the younger self, I think probably being patient. And I've done at various points, and there have been exciting parts of my career and lulls in between, and I'm not very happy in the lulls. But then you stay patient, stay persistent, and you find the good opportunities, you talk to the right people, and keep balls in the air, and the opportunities and the exciting parts come along. So I think that's true of me in my career, and I think it's true for people within founders and entrepreneurs, is there's so much urgency in the industry. And it's okay, we're going to invest this money, and then you got to go and spend all the money and hire. And I think focusing on those fundamentals that I was talking about, and people to be patient, and not, and here I'm speaking to founders more probably than investors, but not let the investor's sense of urgency really affect you that much, because that's not the best way necessarily to build a business. That's what the investors want. They want a return on their capital as soon as possible. But I think just being patient is a good motto.
There's a great analogy you reminded me of, and it's just being, when you're at bat, being patient for the right pitch. Where you may take a swing. Joel, this is awesome. Is there any founders, potential investors, potential limited partners that want to get a hold of you? How can they find you?
You can find me, joel@healthxventures.com, or our website, healthxventures.com, also have contact information for me or other folks from the team. And love to hear from people who have, mostly it's enterprise sales and healthcare, or enterprise products. And I love to hear from people.
Fantastic. Joel Martin, Chief of Staff, Veda Data Solutions, and operating partner with HealthX. Joel, thank you so much. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having us. Great.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.